Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be talking about some of the comics we got this month. We'll start with DC, we'll go over to Marvel, and then we'll cover the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll cover general plot points and storylines of the comics we discuss. In this monthly comic spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in May 2023. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. Now, it was a five-week month, so I got a little bit more than I've usually been getting. I totaled up to, I think, 65 comics. I did not include the Free Comic Book Day stuff in there for a couple of reasons. One, it was a five-week month, and I didn't need to include it to, you know, well, that, and I haven't read it, to be honest. And there's only a few of them that I'm actually excited to read. It's maybe not even the right term. There are some I'm more interested in reading than others.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I noticed my interest in some of the Free Comic Book Day has been waning in the past couple years. But there was two that I was really looking forward to. And yeah, we can talk about those later on because I think we did have some listener questions.
We do have a listener question on that. So we'll hold that off for the Q&A episode.
Yeah, but I only received... We're not that far apart. I'm 70 comics, so five more than you.
What was interesting this time for me is most of my comics were DC.
Ah.
And I actually got DC comics every week this month, and there was one week I didn't get any Marvel.
Interesting. And I've almost started zoning out unless I'm watching your videos and I notice things. Like when I open my own package, I'm not paying attention if I got DC or didn't get DC. But I did notice it seems like we're getting DC more regularly from our online company.
And that would presumably mean they're getting it more consistently from their distributor. So
exactly. So I'm like, I don't know what changed, but I'm happy because we both use Eric, Deep Discount Comics. And so he's been good to us, but he gives us the stuff when he gets it. But
he can't give it to us before he gets it, obviously.
Exactly. It's scattershot, though, sometimes. Sometimes you get stuff, 2 weeks worth, and sometimes you get none.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and all it takes is for a truck to be delayed and suddenly you don't get, you know, a given publisher 1 week or something, but yeah.
Yeah, and now with Penguin Random House, you got Lunar, and then you got Diamond, you've tripled the chance that one of those boxes won't arrive on time.
Which you could argue is a good thing or a bad thing. It's a good thing because the other two presumably would, but it's a bad thing because you've got three times the stuff to go deal with. It's just, yeah.
I'm glad that I don't have to do that. That just seems like more frustration for me, if I was a store owner.
There are logistical things that I think a lot of people do not appreciate, and I am very thankful I'm not a store owner. I do help Eric with the software that puts together the monthly order form, and as things are shifting from one publisher to another and stuff, from how we'd originally written the code back in the, oh, there's Diamond, and that's it days, to, oh, there's UCS, there's Lunar, now there's Penguin, and things are shifting from one to another. It's a bigger headache for store owners than I think most people realize.
Yeah, and it's not the good old days where you say, oh, I like this guy or this company treats me better. No, you have to go to point A to get DC. You have to go to point B or C to get Marvel. You can't get all your stuff at one place. Even Diamond, they don't carry DC, so you can't get all your stuff there.
Yeah, because it's not like this broke the Diamond monopoly. It just created two other concurrent monopolies.
Yeah, exactly. So just frustration and headaches, and now you have to deal with multiple people, whether you want to or not.
Yeah, it's just more bookkeeping. And from my standpoint as a consumer, I used to have, because I'm a geek, I had it to where I could go pull the list of what was coming out every week. Easy when there was just the one list over at Diamond. I've since had to switch to the comic list and pull that. And then it would go through my list of what do I have in order and flag the stuff. But now, because sometimes I'm getting stuff early or late from one distributor or another and stuff, that system is pretty much shot to hell, you know? And it's hard to keep track of, did I get everything? Did I miss something? Did I forget to order something? Because I'm having to really go and do a lot of this manually.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot more work for you and a lot more work for the shops.
Yeah, yeah. Well, shall we go take a look at DC?
Yeah, I just filtered my list down where of which I can't. I think it was 70 comics. I think I said I got 16 from DC.
I got 27.
Holy mackerel, that's a big difference.
And a lot of them were in the kind of B range. They were good, not great, not horrible. There were a couple that were above that and a few that were below that.
Wow, I'm kind of baffled that I got so much less than you did. Well, there was, I would say about half my stuff would be in that AB category, and then the rest were in the meh, except for one that I didn't enjoy, which I've already canceled, and this was just the last trailing issue.
Dare I ask?
I haven't been enjoying the Icon versus Hardware.
You know, that's funny, because that one I'm really enjoying. That, for me, got a B+.
Oh, and that's the one I haven't been enjoying. I think I wasn't there from the beginning since they relaunched it, and I feel just unable to, like, grasp, you know, the characters. They're a little bit different than the original iteration of them.
How much do you like time travel stories?
I'm so with them, because time travel can get confusing. And if you don't follow along, if you're not seeing year this or this time frame, you can very easily get lost in the story and have to go back and be like, where am I again?
Because this is definitely a time travel story.
That's why I'm confused.
Yeah, and it's gone in some very unexpected directions, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I suspect it's, like many time travel stories, if it's this type, it's going to end as if it never happened, but it's still a fun read for me.
Yeah. I think with me, it's just that I feel like I've read it and I got a little bit confused. Where's this going? What's going on? And then it changed and it jumped around a little bit too much and I just kind of lost the story. And when I lose the story, I don't go back and reread it and try to catch up. I just kind of like, all right, next, move on.
And that's fair. That's fair. I've had a couple of things where I've kind of lost the thread of it and they're doing such a poor job on so many titles. Getting a new reader or a lapsed reader or a forgetful reader reconnected with the thread of the story, that yeah, it's easy to fall off a title that way.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say anything bad about it, anything like that. It's just I think more than anything, I felt lost in the story, and I was just like, I'm at that point where if I'm not enjoying myself, I'm quicker to just move on.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, but that's the only one that I got rid of. But the rest of the stuff was either good or meh. And what did you really enjoy? Because I had a few that there's one that stood out to me that I think was the best of the bunch. And it's one that I'm going to say I'm a little bit sad because I heard it's slowing down.
Well, I think you can guess what my two favorites were probably. But I'll save you the embarrassment in case you can't.
All right.
It's Batman Scooby-Doo Mysteries.
Oh, yeah, that would be it.
I thought that was a really fun one. And it was interesting because the art was really fun. It fit the style I expect from this. Everything seemed to be on model, but it seemed to be very clearly drawn versus maybe referenced or something. It's hard to explain, but it gave us a lot more interesting camera angles and some stuff that we don't normally get because it does feel like some of these artists, I don't know if it's because they don't feel like they can hit the model dead on, or if they're literally referencing it. I mean, there have been a few issues that frankly feel like it's almost the color forms kind of a thing of, let me put Scooby in pose A here and Shaggy in pose B here and that kind of a deal. Not in a bad way, because it tells the story well, it is what you expect to see them in, and because let's face it, there are certain camera angles and positions that you just don't typically see the Scooby gang in.
Okay.
Particularly the classic era when it was much more limited animation. So to have somebody where we're getting some very cinematic camera angles for this, very interesting, and I appreciated it, and it still looked like the Scooby Gang.
Very cool. Now, what was the other one that you really liked?
I'm really enjoying Batman Superman World's Finest.
Oh, okay, yeah, World's Finest. All right, awesome. And this was the Rise of the Ultramorpho.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun seeing Metamorpho, the Metal Men, the Doom Patrol. I mean, these are all heroes from the 60s era-ish.
Yeah.
But then we get Mechanique as the villain, and that's from, like, the 80s from All-Star Squadron? I'm like, it's still retro, but not as retro. We got a little bit of the Challengers of the Unknown. That's a nice thing to toss in there. It's got that kind of Silver Age feel to it, and I mean, who better to write that kind of a thing than Mark Waid, who probably has all of that in his memory at his fingertips whenever he needs it. There was a point where it's like, oh, we've got the inhibitor collars. I'm like, that's cliche. It's a lazy way to depower characters.
Yeah.
And they put one on Batman.
Ah, yep. It was a good issue. I thought Mark Waid's doing a great job, and I like it. Like, I'm not a super big fan of the Metal Men. You know, I've seen them a couple times in different things that we've read.
Fair enough.
But I mean, but it still, it was written good. It was a good issue.
Okay, I gotta ask. Ultramorpho, good name.
Yeah.
Numezo?
Yeah, that's...
not a good name.
No, I'm like, these names are, yeah, they're that's a little rough.
I mean, and the cliffhanger with Robin, kind of fun. I mean, Mark Waid and Dan Moore are doing some great stuff here. They're really showcasing the DC universe of a few years ago. It's got a nice retro feel to it. It's a ton of fun, and I'm really looking forward to some of the upcoming stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You want to know what's funny? You know how you were asking me if I like time travel stories? Mm-hmm. It brings me to the one that I did like, which did have time travel in it, Justice Society of America 4.
Mm.
It was a really solid read, I thought, this month, and we get Helena traveling through time with the other, you know, JSA members, and it was just kind of cool. We get some exposition about the opportunity given to, you know, the bad guys from the past to turn in their lives around and join her. Mm-hmm. You know, almost like a group of bad guy JSA team is what I would call it. And now another group attacked by Degaton. But basically, it was really kind of a great issue. But the thing that is a little bit disappointing to me is that I heard that Justice Society is getting bumped. It's going to be late again. And so I'm starting to think this might be a Geoff Johns thing. I don't know if he's doing this because he's wanting to roll in the kids from the Stargirl and the Lost Children. And he's
going to in issue 6, which was originally supposed to come out this month.
Exactly. And so they're saying they're getting bumped like multiple months. So we're not going to get an issue for like at least 3 months now on Justice Society.
Well, this issue number 4 was supposed to come out back in February.
Yeah, they're getting later and later. This is bad.
So we should have had 5 and gotten 6 this month, which is where I think the Stargirl stuff dovetails in, or maybe it's between 6 and 7 or something like that. So, I mean, the delays are really hurting the story momentum here.
Yeah, it's almost the same thing that happened with the button.
Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock, I'm sorry. Doomsday Clock. It seems like Geoff Johns, and I don't know what it is about him, that he it's not the artist that's slowing down the story, it's him.
Well, but isn't that getting towards the fault of the editor? When it happens with the writer once, okay, it's on the writer. When it happens on a somewhat recurring basis, that starts to be on the editor for not having started the thing on time or earlier, not, you know, writing herd on the writer to get the stuff out in time. Yes, it ultimately, if Geoff Johns is not getting in time, it is his fault, but it ceases to be just his fault.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's weird because if you know he's going to be the writer who takes forever to do something, one, you got to give him a ton of, you know, rope to get caught up and go right ahead. But I don't know what he's doing beyond writing comics right now. I don't know if he's still doing TV stuff, movie stuff. I don't know what he's doing.
Well, maybe just have him write one comic.
One comic, because it's become chronic at this point. It's really hurting the universe. It's hurting the books. When this thing spills out, I'm probably going to have forgotten those kids when we finally see them in JSA.
Well, because it'll have been a couple of months since their series ended, which happened this month. And it's a horrible way to build up any kind of story momentum and such. And maybe instead of having him write JSA and Stargirl and the Lost Children while he's still doing Junkyard Joe or whatever, right?
Yep, he's still doing that. And that seems to be more timely than these.
Well, he's got more ownership in it. And maybe exactly. He started it earlier, maybe that was already written before he started this. But either way, it's killing the momentum here.
Yeah, it is. It's gotten so bad. And what's weird is I started this off by saying I really enjoyed this issue and it was a good issue and it was fun. Yet at the same time, I feel like I'm losing a little bit of the story because it's taken so long to get the issues. And I feel, and then I read, oh, you know, Bleeding Cool put out something. Oh, the next issue is not going to come out until August. And then the issue after that's getting bumped another 2 or 3 months. I'm like, man, I'm afraid I'm just going to forget everything that's happening. And someone's going to pick it up and trade once again and say, this is awesome. Why didn't you guys enjoy this? You don't know what you're talking about. I'll be like, man, I was reading it. It didn't work. But right now, it's still good. It's still good right now.
Well, this one pushed a button or two for me. There were a few panels that were just kind of gross.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's like, I get what you're trying to do and what makes, you know, this Huntress special in this case and whatnot, and that's fine, but you could have shown it in a way that was less gross.
Yeah.
And again, other than that, I loved, you know, most of the art by Michael Janin and Jerry Ordway and stuff. But this just had so little story momentum because it had been long enough since I'd read the previous issue that, yeah, I think if we were, when this is all, because it's a 12-issue series, I think.
Yeah.
When it's all said and done, could we come back, read it in, you know, rapid succession, you know, and enjoy it more? Almost certainly.
Yeah, I'll think we'll read it and it could be, wow, this is a great story. But reading it like we're reading it now, it's like B-plus material just because of the spacing and the frequency we're getting the issues right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, Green Arrow, are you still enjoying that? Because we really both really like Green Arrow number one. I like Green Arrow number two, but I had a question for you in there.
I liked it. I mean, I'm curious who or what's bouncing Ollie through time and space is what seems to be happening.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about the decision of let's go for two out of, what, six issues, and then let's pause for Night Terrors?
Very weird.
That's going to kill the momentum.
It is going to kill the momentum. I like, you know, Ollie's on the strange planet, so I'm like, this is weird. You know, what's going on here? And, you know, he has some team members with him, Arsenal, Black Canary, and, you know, the other characters. But, you know, some of the things I'm like, why does Ollie seem to not remember or know about Connor? You know, what's going on there? That's the question I have. Will that question be answered? Who knows? I'll get an issue in 3 months.
Well, he seemed to remember in this issue. It's just why hadn't he remembered initially?
Exactly. What happened? Now, my biggest gripe, and I noticed it in this issue and like two or three other books, at the end, we get Peacemaker showing up.
Yes.
With Amanda Waller. Why is Peacemaker showing up at the end of all these different comics? I'm like, what's going on here? This is getting weird.
They're, I think, building to something somewhere with Amanda Waller and all that stuff. And Peacemaker is her kind of gun for hire these days, I guess. I don't know. I don't care. I'm not particularly intrigued by that.
Me neither. He showed up in like three comics. I'm like, okay, why are we doing this? Okay.
Well, this comes down to Peacemaker being a big deal on TV and from the Suicide Squad movie and such. Ergo, let's try to make the character a big deal in the comics.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing. Okay.
Doesn't usually work.
No, no. Hey, another one I wanted to ask you about. We got two number ones. We got Green Lantern number one, and we also got Titans number one. Would you like to speak out one or the other first? Or
pick one, and we'll go with that, and then we'll go to the other.
All right, let's start with Green Lantern, since it starts with the letter G. It comes first.
Fair enough. Alphabetical order. Got it.
I thought it was a decent start. It wasn't great, but it was good. It's Jeremy Adams, who was the Flash from the Flash Writer. How did that strike you, the Hal Jordan living in a trailer, saving the miners, and all that?
There were a couple of things here that it's like, you've got to reestablish the status quo. I don't remember what it was before, because I skipped, I think, the last one that Hal starred in. I liked the art by Zermanico, I will say.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
I thought the story was decent, but if I understood it correctly, and perhaps I did not, and spoilers, but, you know, hey, I think people realize by now, for the Monthly Comic Spotlight, we talk about the stories. Hal was leeching the power from Manhunter armor that some guy was running around in, which, great career choice for that guy. It never ends well. And he essentially creates his own power ring out of that energy. Now, this kind of sort of makes sense, because it's not the first time Hal has created a power ring. And I don't think he's the only Earth-based Lantern to do that. I think Kyle's done it a time or two. But I'm really curious how he's going to keep it charged.
Yep.
But moreover, I think it's fascinating to, once again, try to do a Green Lantern series without the Lanterns really being part of the core.
Yeah.
Don't know how that's going to work out, how long it's going to last, or how long I'm going to care if we get an issue, or are we going to get a second issue before Night Terrors?
That's what I don't know. We may only get this one issue, and that's it. I don't know.
I think we get a second. I'm not sure.
My fingers are crossed that we do. We did get a backup story by Philip Kennedy Johnson, and it was a decent John Stewart's story, but I don't know if he's going to continue with this. I don't know.
But you didn't read that Emerald Knight one-shot, did you?
No.
So if you recall, the last Green Lantern thing ended with John becoming the Emerald Knight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so is that whole thing just being kind of ignored here? And I mean, actually, I wasn't quite sure what the hell was going on in the backup feature.
That's what I was wondering, too. Like, did that go away? Like, what happened? I don't know. It's just like, that's an abomination. We'll pretend like it didn't happen.
I don't care if it was an abomination or not. I personally don't think it was. I thought it was an interesting way to turn him into something other than just another Green Lantern, of which there's literally thousands.
Yeah.
But to establish something and then in the span of about a year, actually it hadn't even been that long since the one shot, but it was about a year ago they first established it because it took about 6 months to touch on it, to then just, oh yeah, ignore it like it never happened. That is a lot of what is killing my enthusiasm for DC these days.
Yeah, I felt it because like I read it and I was like, this isn't how he was. And I was like, maybe I missed something. I don't know. Maybe I didn't read that. But apparently I didn't. They just pretended like it didn't happen. Or maybe they're going to address it. I don't know. It was weird.
A lot of things they're pretending didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm getting increasingly frustrated with that.
Yeah. It's like we had a whole episode on that, I feel like.
Yeah, we may have to do another.
Let's start recording again. Now, see, those I would both say were like in the B, the Green Lantern and Green Arrow. They were good, but Green Arrow was, it was good, but I feel like I'm not going to see it now for 4 months or 2 months, so who knows if I want to enjoy it when it comes back.
I enjoyed both. For me, Green Lantern had the advantage of the shiny newness and a crisper art style.
I would agree.
But Titans, number one...
Yeah, Titans. What did you think of that?
Well, this apparently takes place after the upcoming Tales of the Titans miniseries, which, I don't know, maybe that should have been published first then.
Exactly. That was funny.
Titans Tower looks a lot different than that prison we saw in Nightwing a few months ago that was being rebuilt into the Titans Tower.
Yeah, what happened?
This actually looks a lot like the Wayne Foundation building from the 1970s, with the plants and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it looks cool. Don't get me wrong. I love the look. But, I don't know, maybe have the artist between Nightwing and Titans, I don't know, talk.
Yeah, left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. It's weird.
And then this whole bit, I mean, when was Titano ever a robot or whatever? Now, part of this is my ignorance on Titano, because he hasn't shown up in forever in a year. Although I have recently read something he was in. I thought he was an actual just giant ape, not a robot. But continuity, you know, who cares about that anymore at DC, apparently. What I really didn't like... is the murder mystery this issue ended on.
Yeah, okay.
Because one, murder mystery, doesn't that fit more in a Nightwing title than a Titans title? Not that they can't do murder mysteries.
Yep.
But this feels like a death that's not going to stick, so why bother?
Yeah.
And I've got a whole rant on killing characters. We may save that for the Q&A episode. But I think what I have to say over there applies as much or more here than it does in the other cases.
Yeah. No, I agree completely with everything you said. I will say it was an okay read. I did enjoy it, the book. I did have questions. I'm like, I don't know why they made Garth so moody and I'm not going to join, you know?
They have to explain that. Why do that and not?
I must take care of the sea, you know? Like, I can't, like, okay, what's going on here?
He was copying an attitude he normally doesn't.
Okay. It was just bizarre. And then, you know, it was just, the book was, could be off-putting, but I could see some of the things, but I liked it overall. And I'm beginning to not like the, this was another one that had the Peacemaker and Waller thing, and he just keeps popping up. So here he is again. And that was another thing that was just, it's become like, it irks me a little bit because I kept seeing him in the back of these books.
I thought this was okay. And when you realize it's got Tom Taylor, who I think is a terrific writer in a lot of cases, Nicola Scott, who's a fantastic artist, it's the Titans.
Yep.
It's like complete sweet spot for me. I should have really loved this. And I thought it was all right.
Yeah. You want to know something that's kind of funny? You know how I was telling you about, this just hit me and I forgot, I put it in my notes, I forgot to tell you. The Justice Society, how we are talking about the old or the other JSA, the evil version, the bad guys kind of came together and
the redemption version.
The redemption version. It was kind of funny because I had also been reading that stuff for the book club about Superman and the Legion, and that was written a while back. I think it was like 2007, and I saw similar things in there. I was like, what's old is new again in these current books, because once again you had a team that was like. It's like a bad version of a good team, you know, or a good version of a bad team. Just dipping your hand back into the old bag of tricks and pulling it out again. It's just kind of funny.
There's the old saying of there's only so many stories under the sun. So
that's true.
I mean,
that is true.
And not to discount what you're saying, because, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, go back to the same well and wring more out of it if you can. But, and that's exactly, I mean, what they're doing here with the Titans, because this lineup is the classic New Teen Titans lineup for the most part.
Which I figured you would like.
If they were the same character still, sure.
Yeah.
But I defy anyone who read this issue to go back to the original dozen or so issues of the original New Teen Titans run that Sam and I have done some back issue spotlights on, and try to imagine the scene with Gar and Raven in front of the tower kissing with the original versions of those characters from the original New Teen Titans.
They're just completely different.
It does not work. It does not compute.
Unfortunate.
I mean, Gar might try it, but he'd have met Trigon a lot sooner. It's just different versions of the characters. I get it. Got to change with the times, whatever. And that's fine. It's just hard for me to get particularly excited about this.
No, I understand where you're going. This one was a weird one because for me, I was like, it was an okay getting the band together, you know, a B-type category book for me. But with this one and also with Green Lantern, they were like that B-category book. And for a first issue, that's typically not a great sign because you lose some steam on the second issue. Like, I would say Green Arrow lost a tiny bit of steam, but it started so high that it was still really good.
I think what they perhaps should have done, and this is a half-baked idea, so maybe it'd work, maybe it not, it should not have been Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman that were continuing to hound Nightwing to form the Titans to step up as the Justice League.
Yeah.
It should have been somebody else.
Oh.
And I'm kind of thinking maybe Supergirl, although I'm not entirely convinced that would work, although given what's happened in Batman, Superman, World's Finest stuff, the dynamic between Nightwing and Supergirl leveraging that could be hilarious. But have whoever has been sent by Superman, Batman as the, hey, keep pestering him until he does it thing, be the first person Nightwing recruits into the new JLA style of Titans. Because then you have a new member.
Yeah.
And this is where Supergirl, having been a member at one point, kind of doesn't work. Maybe Mary Marvel, but does she have powers today or tomorrow, whatever, may or may not work. But giving a new character into the team gives new readers a entry point into the book and the group.
Very true, yeah.
Whereas this is an old boys club. These people, these characters have been hanging around for over 40 years.
Yeah, long time.
This character dynamic is potentially older than a fair number of the readers, hopefully.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed, otherwise we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That would work better, probably.
I don't know how old Tom Taylor and Nicola Scott are. It's conceivable this group has been around with this lineup longer than they've been.
Which is insane.
So, don't know if that's the case or not, but it would be kind of funny.
Now you got me wondering. Tom Taylor is 44.
Okay, so not the case, but not off by much.
Yeah, and Nicola Scott, I don't know how... Oh, here she is. Hold on. Let me see how old she is.
The power of Google.
I know, I love this. Oh, it doesn't have her birth date in here. Son of a gun. All right, never mind. To remain to anonymous.
And I'm not saying they had to radically shake up the team or whatever, but to not change it at all other than the fact that these aren't the same characters. Because it boggled my mind that in this reality, Cyborg started as a Justice Leaguer, went to the Titans, and now, oh, this is something we've dreamed about all our lives, to be like the Justice League. It's like, dude, you were one.
Yeah.
But that actually, I think, came out over in Cyborg, not in this issue.
Yeah. Kind of unfortunate for you. And what's weird is, for me, it's okay. I mean, it's a good story. It's just, I'm not loving it. I wonder how long the Justice League's going to be disbanded. I don't know when the Justice League movie's coming out or whatever, but
I'm more curious when it comes back what lineup it'll have.
Me too. I think that'll be interesting.
So.
Well, what else did you like? Because I had a few more that I liked, and then I have more of the meh.
I'm going to go with Adventures of Superman, John Kent.
Oh, I did really like that. I thought that was good.
Tom Taylor's doing some great stuff over the Injustice world. Go figure, he created it.
Yeah.
I think this is some of the best kind of, you know, Superman Jr. stuff he's done yet. And I use Superman Jr. because, well, if we've got a real Superman around.
Exactly.
And I can't call him Superboy anymore because there's a few others that fall by that name, I think.
Yeah, true. I like how they use the trust with his trust for Batgirl and Alfred,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. He's, you know, discerning and also trusting the nature of the people that he really knows, the character, who they are, which is It's good, but
odd thing to do in that universe.
It's good, but I'm like, that could also bite you because you don't know the character of the people in this world.
It's like, I mean, if you go with that rationale, if I know what you're like in my world, ergo I can trust you here, he should be trusting his dad.
That's where I was going with it. I'm like, Come on, man, you're setting yourself up. You're saying you trust them more than your own father. All right, I'm not believing that. But also, it was weird. They had John track down, you know, the pink hair, Jay.
Mm-hmm. The boyfriend.
The boyfriend. And that was kind of weird, but like, weird in that, like, I'm going to try to hit on you to see if you're a good guy. That didn't work for me. I said, that was weird.
It was a little weird, but it was only a page or two, so, you know, I'll allow it.
Luckily, didn't ruin the book, but it was, I think this has been the best John Kent, because the last one I did was not enjoying. These four issues have been really good.
Yeah, I think this is better than the previous series.
Yeah, the previous was really not good.
The next thing I think we ought to go to, since we're talking Tom Taylor quite a bit now, let's go to Dark Knights of Steel number 11.
Ah, how did that work for you? Because I read it and I was like, it seems like a good story. What's going on?
There is that. I think he's telling a solid story here, but I'm also thinking that we need to give it maybe 6 months to a year after it finishes. Now it's only got one issue left, so hopefully that's not too long. But give it time to see if there are going to be any sequels or anything like that, or if this is a you know, one series and done kind of a deal. And then maybe consider doing a back issue spotlight to see if it does read better in kind of that single sitting mentality.
I would agree with you there, because when I read each individual issue, I'm like, wow, this seems like it's a good story. I just, for the life of me, can't remember what's going on. And so reading it all together, it would give it more justice. You know, the story, I bet you it's actually pretty stellar.
Yeah, but if it was a really good story, we wouldn't feel like we had to reread it to get that out of it. We'd be getting that out of it as we read it the first time.
True. That's very true. And what's so weird is he's able to write some things on time, yet his Dark Knights of Steel, he can't do it. It's weird that this story is the one, you know, the sacrificial lamb. And he has another alternative world stories. He did Deceased. Mm-hmm. He did three volumes of Deceased and really didn't miss any issues. So I don't know what it is about this story.
Well, and again, Injustice Gods Among Us went on for like 5 years, and some of those were coming out, it felt like, more than once a month.
Yeah, so this may be an artist issue. I have no idea. I honestly don't. Because I wouldn't think it's Tom Taylor unless maybe the workload. Who knows?
Don't know. Don't care. It's not coming out on a timely basis. So that's what I notice.
Well, there was one other one that I liked, but Shazam number 2. I did enjoy that. I like that Billy isn't in control of his powers totally and personality at times. So I like that what they're doing there. But it's also a little bit kind of weird because you have this whole jealousy aspect with the other family members. How is that gelling for you? Or is it not?
I've never been a huge fan of the other characters. Again, this is a Geoff Johns thing he crammed in there that he did a dry run on over in Flashpoint. To me, what was really odd was just seeing the Psycho Pirate being just kind of a normal supervillain.
Yeah.
He has not been used that way in decades. And I don't have any objection to him being used this way. It was just odd.
You're just like, I haven't seen this in a while.
And we get the first clue that the gods are kind of why Billy is acting odd as Captain Marvel. Okay, hopefully the third issue of this thing gets the story going again after the Night Terrors break.
That's true. I forgot we're not going to see it for a while, and hopefully I remember what's going on.
I think Mark Waid is actually doing the Night Terrors stuff, and it may play into the ongoing stuff, but don't know, don't care, I'm sitting it out.
Yeah, I'm not getting it, so I'll have no clue.
Yeah.
Where did you want to go? Because like, there's other things on here, but those were like the ones that I liked. The rest of the stuff was meh. You know, like when I say meh, like okay stuff, average stuff.
For me, there were a couple of things that were the below average and a few of them. It's like Detective Comics.
Yeah, that's not good.
Why am I getting this?
I dropped it.
that one I think I need to pull the trigger on and just get rid of. Wonder Woman, I was not loving the whole dream sequence filler issue, but I'll give it 800, and then maybe I'll come back for the next volume, maybe I won't. I've been getting this since before issue 300.
Yeah, I picked up 800. I haven't read anything else. I just wanted to see what the 800 was.
Yeah. Did you pick up Cyborg?
I did not. Did you like it or not?
Not loving the art. It almost has a caricaturish aspect to it.
I noticed that in the solicit. It didn't look like something for me.
There was one or two places where, man, there was just some clumsy exposition by a character that I guess we should recognize from one of the one-shots they did somewhere at some point. There were two pages of some TV personality just ranting and stuff, and I'm like, Really? And then we get to the funeral for Cyborg's father, which, okay, Silas Stone just died. But that doesn't jive with him having died early in the New Teen Titans run originally. So how does all this play out? And again, Cyborg having been a Justice Leaguer down to a Titans, mind confused. At the funeral, the heroes show up in suit, ties, and masks, which just looked bizarre. And no gloves. So I'm like, hey, dust for fingerprints when they leave. Find out who they all are. The reveal at the end is unexpected, but interesting. But the whole issue just really showed how the everything happens, everything matters mantra just makes no sense. And I think for me, the big hang-up was not only was the writing a little clumsy in a few places, but the art just really wasn't working for me.
Yeah, it looked cartoonish, like you said, in the solicits that I saw.
Yeah, and if this pauses for Night Terrors, that's an easy avenue for me to drop it at that point.
Easy cut, yeah. No, it sounds like it's headed in that direction, based on what you told me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, like, the rest of the stuff that I got, you know, like, there was some okay stuff, and, like, Superman number 4, the arc isn't great by Williamson, but, you know, interaction between Lex and Superman is the thread I care about, and we weren't getting that.
So, I mean, was I the only one thinking that those adventures mentioned by Lex might have made for interesting stories, and it's too bad they didn't tell them?
Yep, they didn't tell them at all, which is unfortunate. That's what the stuff I want.
I just thought it ended on kind of a melodramatic reveal, and the issue was okay, it's just not wowing me. And Joshua Williamson is an okay writer, but not a great writer.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I mean, and everything else was like Batman, you know, Back to the Normal Earth, Flash. You got two issues. One's an anniversary, and it was just a bunch of short stories that, honestly, if I had to think about them right now, I don't really remember much about any of them other than I think they left out Jay Garrick. They didn't mention him.
Well, we had two issues of Flash this time.
Yeah, we got $7.99 and $800.
$7.99 was another zany, wacky adventure.
Yeah.
Little plot, little sensibility. The Terrifics were there, didn't really do anything. We time jump over something.
Yep.
Wally changes to what looked like an earlier version of his Flash costume with the silver piping and stuff. But the part that worked the least for me was, oh, we've got to go get Zane. We've got to get Zane. I'm like, who the hell is Zane?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, that's his kid.
The third. Yeah.
And then the 800, the first story where we've got a bunch of villains playing cards and talking about why nobody goes to Central City or should go to Central City as a villain. I couldn't even tell who a few of them were. And it's like, that didn't help. The Impulse story being set between Impulse 6 and 7 from September 1995.
Good luck remembering that.
Yeah, okay, who cares? The Flash family story, it looked like the Barry and Iris from the comics, but felt more like the TV versions.
Yeah.
We get this thing with the Hunter Zolomon Zoom coming back, but I'm not sure why or where he'll show up or why I should care. And then we get a tease for the next Flash series that really did not get me excited for it.
Me neither. I felt like less and less engaged with the book with each passing story.
Yeah, yeah. And Flash, any version of them should be an easy sell to me.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was just like, all right, we'll see on the next writer.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
The one other one I wanted to touch on was Nightwing 104.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nightwing 104.
Fun seeing Nightwing with powers.
That was a series I liked, by the way. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I liked the Superman cameo. The interaction between him and Nightwing was great. Hopefully we'll be getting back to a regular Nightwing story soon. And then the backup feature with Superman Jr. and stuff was okay, but not great. Hopefully it's over.
Yeah, I would agree. It was a good issue, not great. And I guess the powers were from that event I skipped.
No, it was from last issue.
Oh, last issue. Oh, my God. My mind's completely
Neron
shot.
Neron gives him powers temporarily to tempt him.
I remember. Okay, yeah. I remember.
And next issue, we're going to get from the vantage point of Nightwing gimmick issue. And then I guess we go to Night Terrors.
Oh, well, I won't be reading that, so.
Move over to Marvel?
Yeah, I'm going to filter my list now. Got it. How many Marvel things did you get?
I got 20 things from Marvel. Most were in that kind of, frankly, the B-minus category. I think one of them got up to a B. And there were three things that were in the C category of... One or two of them may get into the see you later category.
Yeah, this is the area where I think I ordered too many and I need to make some cuts in here because I got 32 Marvel, but there were a few of them that I'm like, I need to get rid of these or I'm not enjoying it. you know, like the things I'm not enjoying, I started getting those before the fall X-Men stories. Horrible.
This one we got the Sons of X.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, and I was surprised it took two characters out of play for a little bit.
It did. So, I mean, it was the book that I dropped a while back. Was it Simon Cy Spurrier writing that?
I think so.
I can't. I think so. And I dropped that book, so I'm just like, I didn't want to read this book. I didn't read the solicit or something. I'm like, I didn't want this. Now, another one that I'm really not enjoying, I'm not liking this Captain America number 13. We got two of the Sentinels of, oh no, we got Symbol of Truth 13 was horrible. And Captain America Sentinel of Liberty was just kind of so-so.
I thought both of them were just middle chapters of the crossover, felt like filling time. And with the Symbol of Truth where they're slugging it out with each other, it's like, really?
Yeah. Okay. It felt like, I guess his name, Onyebuchi. I don't know how to say this guy's name, the writer. He doesn't know who Steve Rogers is, I feel like. I felt like he's writing the character. Yeah, okay, Steve has a son. Steve is not going to completely turn his backs on Misty Knight and Sam Wilson and all these people, you know, people that may be hurt. I got my son. That's just so disingenuous to the character.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and then, yeah, we're not going to act out with emotion. We're not going to talk. We're going to start throwing punches. I'm like, it made no sense. This guy doesn't know who the characters are. Kill this book, please. That's how I felt.
If we know the characters better than the person writing the book, why are we reading it?
Didn't that feel so disingenuous to who the characters are?
Oh, yeah. Captain America, at his heart, would not have been, I've got to pick one person to save. It's, I will save them all.
Exactly. I'm going to save you, and we're going to rush to go save my son together.
Yeah.
That's who he is. That's just who he is. He doesn't leave you in distress and be like, selfishly go like, I got to take care of mine. See ya. I'm out.
Well, and let's face it. The son is a full-grown adult who's not his biological son, and more to the point, perfectly capable of taking care of himself.
Yeah, he's not a pushover, so...
If anything, it should have been Sam trying to hightail it out there and Steve saying, no, we got to save these people here. Because, again, I trained this other kid from birth or whatever, almost. He's able to take care of himself. We don't need to go bail him out. I mean, yes, let's go help him, but not at the expense of those who are here right now needing our help.
Exactly. I felt like the writer almost put himself in the situation, and he's writing it from my perspective, not the characters he's supposed to be writing and how they would behave.
Didn't I say something recently about, you know, write the character, not rewrite the character?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm shaking my head. Yes. The other books that I did not like that I can't, one I already canceled, Hellcat number 3, canceled already.
Yeah, I skipped that one.
Miles Morales, I went up to Spider-Man up to issue 6. I'm like, it's time to get rid of this. I'm not enjoying it. And then the other one that I really didn't like, and it was the first issue, and it's a character I really like, and I feel like they're destroying this character because I like him, is her Silk.
I skipped that one, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad start. Silk is in an induced coma, and we get a 1920s version of her in a dream, and I'm like, why are we doing this?
I can tell you why.
Why?
Okay, so take Storm, which is set in the period where she first got her mohawk.
Yeah.
X-23 Deadly Regenesis, which is set at some point in the past. I have yet to figure out exactly when. Warlock Rebirth, which is set back in the Warlock and the Infinity Gauntlet, or not the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity Watch era.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think if there are any others. Avengers Warcross Time, set early in the Avengers stuff. I think there's a movement over at the DC Creative, or not DC, Marvel Creative, Marvel. That's thinking, now is not the best time for Marvel, because they're writing other times.
Yeah.
And if they took a character and said, let's put him in a coma so we can go elsewhere, that's insane.
That's insanity. I'm just like, you literally started off with her in a coma, and I'm like, it's just frustrating. I like the character when they first introduced her. She was interesting. She had these powers. And then you remember how she had this unresistible attraction, her and Peter with each other? That mm-hmm. just disappeared instantaneously.
Oh, yeah. Evaporated.
And I'm just like, it was never addressed anywhere. It's just like somebody said, this doesn't work. And I like that. I thought that was cool.
I don't even know if they said it didn't work or they just didn't know about it.
Maybe they didn't read the book when it first came out. Yeah, that's true. The next writer didn't know what was going on, because I thought that could have created an interesting dynamic with like love interest, and yet they can't stop wanting to see each other. And, you know, with MJ or whoever, Black Cat, whoever he's with at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I thought they were going to go somewhere with that, and they didn't. And I'm just like, I'm just disappointed. And I wanted a good Asian American character. Why? Because my wife's Asian. I thought it'd be kind of cool. And I showed her, look, it's Silk. And honestly, this right now, this book sucks.
I forgot to mention Invincible Iron Man number 6.
Oh, yeah.
Which was essentially a filler story in the West Coast Avengers days.
Yeah, it was. In the, back at the West Coast event in the 80s.
Because Tony's becoming a writer. What the hell? Doesn't he have a knowledge base of all his adventures? I mean, this is the guy who literally backed up his mind to a hard drive. Why is he writing this crap down?
I have no idea. All that being said, I did like the issue. I liked the West Coast Avengers, and I liked the fight he had with Stiltman, Rhino, and Doc Ock. I thought that was cool, but like you said, it's nonsensical.
It was entertaining, but not good.
Yes, that's how I would put it. It's a weird issue because it didn't progress the story, and it's like a one-off with a place that does nothing for the story. I enjoyed it, but what are we doing?
Spending $3.99 on it. Why?
Yeah.
Not sure.
What's going on here? So I had that weird feeling coming out. I'm like, yeah, that was a good read, but why am I reading it?
All right. I got to ask, Avengers Warcross Time, and we'll probably revisit this in the Q&A. Did it land the ending for you?
I thought it was a good book. We got some really cool visuals shown to the old Avengers and where they're glimpsing their future. I thought it was a good ending.
I didn't think it landed the ending. I thought it was a fun read.
I understand what you mean by that, because this was probably the weakest of all the issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I know what you mean by that, but I still enjoyed it. I love those flash forwards into almost showing us where we're going, the stories that have already been told, and it made me smile a little bit. But like you said, it definitely was the weakest of all the issues.
It just seemed to be traveling up memory lane and no real
repercussions kind of, or
plot nothing. to the issue.
Yeah, I would agree.
I expected better out of Paul Levitz. Alan Davis delivered on the art, though.
Yeah, the art was fantastic. Now, I will tell you, on the flip side, we got a brand new Avengers, Avengers mm-hmm. number one, and I thought that was really good for a number one.
I thought it was a good getting the band together kind of issue. I appreciated it got the band together in the single issue versus taking an arc.
Yeah.
Curious what kind of role Kang's going to play in this, but it looks like it goes back to the... What'd they say, the timeless thing from two or three or however many years ago?
Yep.
This is not the group of Avengers I would have picked, but it's a good lineup nonetheless, and it was decently justified, and it had enough payoff for the issue.
Yeah, I agree. You get Captain Marvel leading the team versus the two different caps. Tony Stark, they were enemies in Civil War. That's going to be a dynamic there. When the Captain America and Captain thing, that was hilarious. I do like that Scarlet Witch and the Vision. Will there be romance again? I don't know. There's like a lot of stuff that they can do here.
What was funny with the Captain thing is they made a reference to Who's on First that should have been a reference to Airplane.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Airplane was awesome. I literally just watched that last week again. It was hilarious.
Timeless.
Yeah.
No, wait, that's awesome. The one shot they're tying into.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got a nice catch up on the status quo of the Black Panther. If mm-hmm. you haven't been reading about him not being the king and all that stuff, Sam Wilson, Thor, and the one thing I liked when they put Thor in there, they're like, come to Thor, hey, we want to have you be an Avenger. And Thor's like, I loved his reply to that because he's the god. He's like, I'm going to exist longer than you ants, or fleas who don't have a... He didn't say that. Your timeline, your life is just limited. He's like, I never left. Why are you asking me? I've been here from the beginning. I'll be here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, yeah, that's Thor. That's perfect.
It had a very interesting look at a lot of these characters, and it served as an on-ramp for people who are unfamiliar with a few of the characters. So to me, it was very successful in that regard, which Jed McKay, I expect that sort of accessibility.
Yeah, it was here. It's the exact same creative team as the Black Cat stuff that we love.
Yep.
Because you got Sia Villa on the art, who was the Black Cat team. And I think it's compared to Jason Aaron, this is like A+ compared to Jason Aaron.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because Jason Aaron was down in the D range with what he was doing.
I'm just curious what we're going to think of this title, say, 6 issues in.
Fingers crossed the best, because it could totally turn into a plane wreck or a train wreck and boom.
I don't think it'll turn into a train wreck or anything. It's just, I don't think it's going to be the best run ever of Avengers either.
No. It's just refreshing because of where we were. Yeah. I think that's what I'm feeling.
Oh, no, I totally agree. It's a much better Avengers than the last volume already, and I don't see any reason that'll stop.
Now, I had stuff I liked, but I wanted to give you an opening, and then we got to talk about Amazing Spider-Man at some time, but Did you want to go over what you liked, or did you want to do the Spider-Man stuff?
I want to talk two things real quick.
Okay.
Best of the bunch for me this time around was Doctor Strange number 3.
Oh, I thought it was really good.
Another Jed McKay thing. Go figure.
Yeah.
Fun done in one issue, plays into Doctor Strange's long history against Dormammu, and I like the backup kind of featuring Dormammu going up against Nico from the Runaways. That was a nice connection. Didn't need the backup, though. Would have liked it a buck cheaper.
Yeah.
But the whole bit with why they were referencing all the backstories and stuff had a good payoff for what was otherwise could have just been a throwaway issue, but they covered a lot of ground there.
I agree. I thought it was so clever because you're seeing all those cliff notes into how they defeated Dormammu in the past.
Yep.
All those cliff notes and references.
The footnotes were great.
It totally nailed the landing. I was like, oh, that's awesome. That was really cool.
Fantastic Four number 7, otherwise known as Fantastic Four number 700.
Oh, yeah, 700.
Not the kind of issue 700 I was wanting.
Yeah, I can understand.
It was a Doom story, not a Fantastic Four story.
Yes.
It was not a great Doom story at that. And it just kind of stops versus ends. It was disappointing.
No, I get where you're going.
The backup with S.H.I.E.L.D. being back and being a different acronym, interesting, but nothing earth-shattering, and I don't know that it should have happened necessarily here.
I didn't think this was the best comic to have the S.H.I.E.L.D. Hint dropped. I mean, maybe at the back of Avengers, I don't know, something else. Well, it's just weird.
Fury came out the next week and happens before FF7, so it's like, publish them in the other order.
And it made sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
This was a total Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Or you remember that one, there was a show with, I'm trying to remember. Never mind, I'm not going to do this. My mind doesn't work. But there's been several, my mind does not function. No, but there's been several Groundhog Day type movies. And this is a total play on that with Dr. Doom going back to the moment, can I save my grandchildren if I would have done this, if I would have done this, if I would have done this. And it was clever, but at the same time, it didn't progress the story very much. And we're left with the same feeling that I have that the writer didn't want to write the kids. That's what I feel.
It was goddaughter, not grandkids, just for clarity.
Oh, goddaughter, yeah, I'm sorry.
It puts a spin on the character of he was never going to succeed. He isn't smarter than Reed Richards. And that realization could crack the character, ergo he can never have it.
Yeah.
And it tied into the what happened while they were gone, this whole thing. It didn't work for me, and it's like, I was really hoping you'd just celebrate the history of the Fantastic Four, and you didn't. You wallowed in the mistakes you've already made in this volume.
Unfortunate, but true.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. You remember how I told you that I really liked Avengers just because it was like the palate cleanser from our last run? The other two that I really enjoyed, one I know you're not getting, Joe Fix. Oh, actually, I don't think you're getting either one. Joe Fix It, fantastic. It was the final issue of Peter David's little 5-issue story where you get great over-the-top action fighting in Vegas, a team-up of the Hulk and Spider-Man, and it was just so much fun. And I hope we get more of it because I know Peter David went to the hospital. So, you know, my fingers are crossed that he's okay and that we get more stuff from him in the future. And then Planet of the Apes number 2, I'm still really enjoying that. I can't help but say I've been loving this comic. Issue number 2 was actually better than issue number 1, which is weird.
Nice.
You get a jump ahead of 4 years. You get scenes from Borneo where the orangutans are free and interacting with like local kids and just start discovering more stuff. The virus was actually a cure from Alzheimer's and stuff like this and stimulates brain activity. Apes became smarter. Humans, unfortunately, we tried creating this cure for Alzheimer and it didn't do so well. And so there's all kinds of, you know, play around that interaction. You get some people who are actually raising apes and teaching them. They're almost like they have them almost kind of enslaved at one point, teaching them like farming skills because we don't have enough people to do jobs.
Mm.
And then they had some practicing like defense because we need people to protect us. If that's not a, you know, we know where this one's going. Dun, dun, dun.
Who could guess?
Yeah. Was there anything else that you really liked?
Do you want to go ahead and talk about Spider-Man?
Yeah, let's talk about that because, okay, we got 25 and 26.
Yeah.
Did you like either one? And I'll tell you, I did like one and I didn't like another. And I know you probably didn't like either one.
You are correct. I thought 25 issues later, we finally find out what happened to MJ.
Yeah.
It sort of answered some questions. It just wasn't overly satisfying. It undercut one or two things that we had been led to believe.
Yeah.
And again, 25 issues to get to this. Yeah. And then we get to the next issue, and that's picking up stuff from Amazing Spider-Man 21 from back in March.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am not loving these time lags.
It's horrible. Yeah.
And in the span of 26, an entire plot line or two were just nullified. Oh, yeah, forget that. Who cares? And then there was one thing where I'm like, when could that character do that? And that was like integral to the story.
Yeah.
And it's enough to make me think I'm probably done with this title.
I can understand that. I really can. I liked one thing about issue 25, which was the reveal issue. I don't know what it was. I don't know why. This was the one where I was like, wow, that JR's gotten way better with the art. And then I realized there's Kari Andrews was doing some of the art in there. I was like, oh, never mind. We get to Peter. I'm like, oh, there's the art I know. But it was, you know, you saw her find the love with Paul and the kids and all that stuff. And I found myself, I literally got a little bit emotional, teared up a little bit with Peter. And, you know, the anger and despair he was feeling because he's a good guy. And there's something, you know, probably that happened with me where I've been reading, like, you know, Traveling to Mars and stuff. These things with more emotional overtones and stuff, they've been working for me. So I read this and just seeing how he reacts when he runs into the Fantastic Four, seeing how he's hurt. He wants to act out, but he can't. And I was just like, man, that was powerful. I felt it. And that was the only thing I liked about the issue. So the emotion that came through. So it worked for me, and I don't think it'll work for everyone, but I felt Peter's pain in there, if that makes sense.
I can see that, and there was definitely some pain for him to have.
Yeah, but then we get to the next issue, and I'm just like, not good. What are we doing here? what is this? It's everything else about the book is not really that good, and I'm like, why are we doing this? And then we got the thing that apparently everyone knows about that happened in issue 26.
Let's save that for the Q&A, and we're going to have spoilers in the Q&A stuff on this particular issue.
Yeah.
And again, they made, I think, some major mistakes here.
Yeah. I did want to ask you about one other comic that I knew you were getting.
Before we get off this, planning on dropping it, I do have another 5 or 6 issues already pre-ordered because it comes out so fast. So at point, 31 may be the last one I get. I got to make that decision.
No, I can see that. I'm making cuts here. I'm going to be cutting like some of the stuff I told you, Guardians of the Galaxy, Danny Ketch, Ghost Rider. I'm going to be getting rid of that. I don't know why I picked it up.
It's one thing to be cutting these titles that, you know, they keep trying to put out and don't succeed, not, you know, one of their anchor characters.
Yeah. Spider-Man should be an anchor character, and it's just been an unfortunate kind of train wreck that we've watched.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like Avengers with Jason Aaron.
But, you know, 31 versus 65, so I'm learning. Dropping it twice as fast.
Yeah, twice as fast. Wolverine number 33. Is that still working for you because it's the Beast and Wolverine battle?
It is, but it's going on a little long.
It's still working for me. I like the battle in there, and I like, is the Army of Beast things Wolverine? Is that
working?
We're going to
get at least another 2 issues of this.
Yeah.
There was also something in X-Men where they were dealing with the ramifications of Wolverine dying and them not picking up after him?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And it begs a question about this whole resurrection process, particularly with him more than anyone else, because it's not just that Wolverine's a mutant, he's got adamantium.
Exactly.
And I'm pretty sure they had a passing reference to, oh yeah, we handle it this way or whatever, but that's one thing if he dies, you know, once or twice, but that's not the case here.
Yeah, when you have a multitude of them, that can cause problems.
Are you still reading X-Men?
Yeah, I am. So I did read that.
Because 22 plays into some of this, you know.
Exactly. Because you had basically the battle of the X-Men with Orcus in that,
yeah,
that kind of tent that they had set up. But yeah, which was kind of funny. I was like, it's tent being run. Now, the other thing that I was going to just mention is we got the last issue of The Punisher, number 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last issue of Jason Aaron and Jesus Saiz's run. And the book has, you know, oh man, what do you say about this?
I say nothing. I didn't get it.
Yeah, so many people have hated this book, and I understand where and why, and I understand people who like it. So it's kind of like it's a love it or hate it book, I guess. I think a lot of people judge the book without ever reading it because they said, oh, he doesn't have guns. He has a sword. But he had guns like 3 or 4 issues into it. The guns are back. he actually a much more powerful gun kind of appeared.
But is it the gun that really defines the character, or is it the mindset?
I think it's the mindset, personally. Yeah. Yeah, so I, to me, that wasn't a deal breaker. And then it kind of reminded me of the way people reacted almost about the Hydra Cap thing. And I'm like, if you read the story, it was never Captain America. It was a Jewish guy writing it, and it was a different character who was impersonating Steve Rogers.
Yeah, but we didn't know that for so long into the story.
Exactly. So that's why I think that Marvel's having to spoil the story in the cliff notes for Captain America right now. Like, literally, if you read the cliff notes, they'll tell you. Do you read the cliff notes, and do you know what's going on?
No, I don't.
All right, I won't tell you because I don't want to spoil the story for you then. If you read the recap, it kind of tells you something in there where people are getting upset about the way a character is. And I think they're doing that because of the Hydra crap and the way people react, so that they know, hey, they're kind of telegraphing this. It's not happening. Anyways, I'll leave it at that.
That's bad storytelling all the way around.
I agree. And the only reason why I think an editor stuck it in there, because people don't want to wait for the story to play out, and they think they get angry. And I understand it. I understand. So, okay. We got a lot about retcon and this stuff. Like, people are saying he got retconned, and there is some stuff that did get retconned in here. I don't think it was the youth, because we'd never seen the youth of Frank Castle. So we went and saw the youth thing, and we saw how he got approached and, you know, basically chosen to be the Beast in the future. I think the retcon really happens with the story of Frank and his wife. Everyone remembers the classic assassination. And the retcon, should I say it now? Should I say spoiler? I don't know. It doesn't ruin the story per se, but there is something there. That's why I'm like, should I save it for...
It's a final issue. If people want to avoid it, skip a minute or two forward.
Yeah. Okay. Frank's wife basically asked for a divorce right before the assassination happened.
Ah.
And so that is a retcon, because that was never shown in the comic originally when that scene came out. So that's the retcon for me. So Jason Aaron added that piece in there, and I think that's not true. That's not how the story was.
I think it changes a lot of things, and that's one where inserting, just, you could do it with a simple line of dialogue or whatever, but it spins the story.
Exactly. So he's wanting to tell almost like his uncle wrote Full Metal Jacket, which everyone loves it to be an Amor movie, or wrote the book that Full Metal Jacket's based on. I think he's wanting to tell the story about the broken war hero and the broken person, and basically he comes home a mass murderer, and how things break all over in his life. And so he's wanting to tell that story, but I think he's making that story that the story didn't really happen like that. And so I think that's a part where some people are going to be upset.
Well, he's refitting the character to fit that narrative.
Exactly. And so that's the part where I'm like, I don't agree with that. Overall, I think the story was very good. And then you have some stuff with Frank, which we'll talk about in the questions. I'll save it for that. And an epilogue. And I'll tell you what Jason Aaron had to say at the end of his run. We'll wait till the questions.
Yeah, because I think we're going to have a lot of spoilers there. And I tried not to have too many spoilers in here. There are times where it's like, yeah, we talk about the meat and the story and stuff. But I try to be a little vague on that, because I don't want this to replace the reading experience or ruin the reading experience for people. And I know there are going to be listeners out there who don't care about spoilers, and that's fine, but some people do. I tend to be one of them.
Yeah. So I would say Jason Aaron at the end a little bit broke the Punisher character, or because he put something into canon that wasn't there. And I don't think he should have done that.
Yeah. It's a shame.
With this last issue, this is where he did it. And I'm like, unfortunate. But at the same time, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story. As a whole, I enjoyed the story. It's just like, that's not what happened.
Seems like an odd thing to do on a final issue, though.
Yeah.
It's almost kicking the you know, can and causing a fire or whatever as you walk out of the barn.
And I will tell you, when we get to the questions, what he said at the end of his book, he wrote this whole thing up. And I was like, I feel like that's what he did. He's like, I'm throwing a hand grenade. Boom. I'm out. And
wow.
And they let him do it. And I was like, huh?
Yeah, that's the thing. Huh? That's on the editor.
That's on the editor. And I was like, the editor in chief and Cebulski, you let him do this. And the editor of the book, you guys let him do this. So, all right.
Well, sometimes they just need to get people interested in the character, however they do it, and consequences be damned. But that usually causes problems down the line.
Yeah. So, I'll be interested to see what happens with Frank in the future.
Yeah. Move on to the other publishers.
Yeah, because the rest of it's kind of like meh.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and filter for the indies. All right, here I received 23 comics.
I got less than that. I got maybe 18.
Oh, okay, cool. But I know you and I both got some stuff that we both enjoyed, because I think you might have enjoyed Astrobots number one.
Actually, that's one that I have decided to hold off reading until I have the full thing.
Son of a gun! Oh!
I've had enough of these stories where it just isn't holding up over time.
Okay.
That seemed like an interesting one, and I've been doing this a little with Ancient Enemies, to just let it stack up and see if that works better for me.
So you're going to read it as a trade. I mean, create your own trade, basically.
Effectively, yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I will tell you then, I will not spoil it. I really did enjoy it. It was one of my highlights of the month.
Cool.
It was in the upper echelon.
Good to hear.
Well, okay, now that I won't spoil that.
Sorry.
It's okay. One other thing I wanted to tell you, and I posted this on the Slack, and I'm kind of frustrated with myself. I've been telling you guys I like Nightclub. Nightclub number 5 came out. And I'm like, it's the story by Mark Millar where it's the vampires, mm-hmm. people get vampires, but they turn into superheroes. You know, what would you do if you became a vampire? Would you just wreak havoc, or would you want to be a good guy because you have these new powers? And it was really good. The thing that really makes this story so much better than even the story we're getting, which is awesome, is every one of these issues has been $1.99.
Nice.
And that's so unheard of today, that Mark Millar made this cheaper buying the single issues than the people who are going to buy the trade later on. And my tip of my cap to him for doing that, especially with all the inflation and everything, it's just been an insanely good read and the best value you can get in comics.
Well, it's half the price of most other comics.
Yeah. So I've just been happy with it. I think it's terrific. So anyways, let's go to you and go what you liked before I get into what I like.
Let's see. I thought Star Trek Deep Space Nine, The Dogs of War number 2, this thing is reading like an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Okay, cool.
So I thought that's good. It's telling its own little self-contained story. I also got Star Trek number 8, Star Trek Annual number 1, Star Trek Defiant number 3, all of which are orbiting this whole, I think, upcoming Day of Blood storyline. Some of them are a little better than others. The Annual was kind of a first contact situation, but in a way that touched on so many familiar characters from so many branches of Trek that it was interesting. I'd like to see a second contact on this at some point. Just as, okay, I see where you left off, but now can we revisit it at some point down the line? And I think there are a couple of different ways to do it. One that would be a good, I don't want to say third contact, but not second, but down the line, would be to have Discovery in the far, far future come and see what happened.
Very cool.
So they're doing some interesting stuff. I'm liking how they're mixing and matching branches of the franchise and stuff over in Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant, but they're trying to tell a fairly large story here, and there's pros and cons to that, because I used to read all the novels.
Yeah.
And when the novels started crossing over and telling these huge epic stories touching on all the branches and stuff, it's like, I want a novel, not, you know, a, you know, 1,200 page, you know, monstrosity or something to be reading to get the full story. So I hope they don't go overboard on this. And then the Star Trek motion picture Echoes with an alternate version of the original movie era crew and stuff was kind of fun.
Very cool.
So they're doing some good stuff over with Star Trek.
And I think in my next shipment from Cowabunga, I get the Star Trek library.
Cool.
The IDW library, the first volume of that. And based on how that goes, I think we might even review some Star Trek stuff. I might be picking up more of the IDW stuff in Library Edition.
If that has the Star Trek countdown that leads into the Kelvin timeline movie, I think that'd be a good one for us to do at some point.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. And, well, there's a lot of things I liked. Two of them I know that you got. Ambassadors, number 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like them?
I did, but it's starting to feel like the whole miniseries is slowly getting the band together, which implies this is just the first in a series of miniseries.
Yeah, we're getting time jumps in here and new characters. Yeah, it's every issue is almost like, here's this new character.
Getting a little formulaic. I thought the fifth one had a little gore near the end and stuff. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm not loving it, and I was hoping for a 6-issue and done story, not a 6-issue prelude to what he's going to tell later.
Yeah. Now, issue 5 of that series. Okay, issue 4 and 5 we got. It just seems so bizarre to me, because these people who are getting these superpowers are supposed to be the most deserving. You know, the people who are the least selfish, you know, they look towards mankind. They want to make mankind a better place. And instead, you get this horrible, 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 bigoted, anti-gay, drunk, not good person from Australia. He's the worst of the worst. And you're like, how does he get in these superpowers? Why are they picking him? And they're like, well, oh yeah, he came out that he's gay. I'm like, that makes him deserving? Like, what?
It doesn't make him deserving. It makes him useful to tell a story.
Exactly. That's what I was like, okay, we're not going with the deserving thing anymore. Now we're going to, okay, this is going to be a cool story, and it's going to create drama in this team because we can't have a big kumbaya group is basically what we're going to do.
The person picking the people realizes this is a PR move.
Yep, exactly.
So hopefully it has payoff.
Yeah, when I was reading it, though, I was like, what? This doesn't make any sense. And I was like, okay, whatever. Okay, the ones that I did like, I'm not going to talk about Astrobots. We got Barbaric Hell to Pay #4. This was the finale of, I think, the third miniseries, the second or third. I honestly can't keep track of them because he has books going on at different publishers. And we get a sacrifice that is made with the team on Earth. And it goes down to hell. And the team in hell is fighting against death. I know it sounds weird, but people are sacrificing themselves to go down and help the team in hell to get our heroes out of hell, back to where we want him, taking up the axe. So it's just a lot of fun getting the hero back.
Cool.
Dawn Attack #4, and Death Dealer #12. Those are both from the Frank Frazetta, the Frazettaverse. The art in those are fantastic. Just amazing, amazing art. The story's good. It's not great, but it's good. The art is really the star in these stories, but the story is very solid. Now, one thing I will say about the Death Dealer, they had a free comic book day issue about the Death Dealer thing. The art in there is not representative of the comic. It was horrible on the free comic book day, whereas the art in the comic is actually very good. So I thought they did themselves a disservice with their free comic book day thing.
That's the kind of thing you want to have the same art style, because if it's horrible in the free comic book day, when it's not going to incentivize people to get the comic. If it's terrific there, and then they get to the comic and they're like, what the hell happened? That doesn't work either.
It was just weird how they did that. And I'm like, all right. Now, Junkyard Joe #6 came out. This is the ending, which maybe we'll get Geoff Johns on track, but I doubt it. It was a fantastic ending to Geoff Johns' first Geigerverse world book. It was, I would say, satisfying, happy ending, but that's kind of tracks for Geoff Johns. He tends to be a happier writer. And you get Joe basically protecting the kids and Muddy against a militia that was after Junkyard Joe. And Homeland Security shows up, and basically the whole town's protecting Junkyard Joe. He's part of one of us, you know? So, and then there's teases at the end for tons of more Geiger books that are coming out, Geigerverse books.
Interesting. Okay.
We got Nemesis Reloaded #5, which was a Mark Millar thing. And I remember you hadn't picked it up. I would say this was a really good series. It's a conclusion to the series. Fun read, brutal. Just so you know, that it is kind of brutal.
Oh, yeah. I expected brutal given that one.
Okay. So I'm warning you. All right. You find out Nemesis' origin in this issue. You know, an orphan of a couple that were sentenced to death, and it kind of put everything into motion. So you get a ton of background on the character. It was just fantastic. I got Old Man Logan vibes in this. Great, great read. The next one that I was going to say is really good is Scott Snyder. He's doing Nocterra. He's up to issue 14. Solid read. It's always really good world building, telling the story about the people of light and Lux versus darkness and why there's darkness and why the light never wins. So it went into a ton of exposition on that, but really good. And then the other one that I really, really, really enjoyed was What's the Furthest Place from Here, #13, which was a really good issue because we get focused back on two key characters that were missing, and they were taken, trapped by these people called the Keepers. Their names are Alabama and Lafayette, which is hilarious. They were captured, and it's all about their escape attempts. You know, it took on almost 1984 vibe. Did you ever read that book back in school?
Back in school, but that was a little while ago, yeah.
Yeah, almost like the control of people and the manipulation. So these people are locked up in how they're manipulating and controlling the people to where you're almost giving up and losing hope. So, and then how did they get out of this situation? So I thought it was a really cool book because it gave me those vibes. And it's really weird. Tyler Boss is doing this book, and it's just not every issue has been stellar, but it's been a solid read the entire way through.
Cool.
Yeah. But and then other things are letting me down. World Tree, not as good. Vanish by Donny Cates. I think I'm done with it. This might be the last issue, which is unfortunate. And Indigo Children, it started off good. It's issue three, it's not that great. It's just, it's good, but not great.
Are you still getting Time Before Time?
No, I'm not getting that. Were you getting that?
Yeah, I'm still getting that.
I never got that.
Oh, I thought you were getting that at one point. My bad.
No, I was thinking about picking it up because you had enjoyed it so much.
I'm liking it. It looks like we're gotten to the point where the ancient past era is maybe they're done with that and they're moving on, but this is an end of an arc, so it's hard to know where this one goes because it keeps jumping around in time, sometimes multiple times per issue. It's fun, but it's one that I'm curious how it would read in chronological order.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know that it would make any more sense there sometimes, too.
That's kind of funny.
But it's entertaining. And then Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 108, very interesting kind of Zordon-centric issue. And he, in a weird way, was both the protagonist and the antagonist because Zordon was encountering Vessel and they have a shared past because, well, Vessel is Zordon's body.
Oh.
And how they kind of worked all that out and the interplay and stuff. It was interesting. So they're definitely charting their own course here. They're leveraging the continuity from the show, but they're not anchored or handcuffed by it or anything. And they're able to add to it and do some things that don't have to play back into the show.
Interesting. Very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, that was pretty much my stuff for the month. I mean, I got other stuff that I don't want to talk about, like Forged. Forged number 3. We'll just let bygones be bygones.
Yeah, I got a couple other things, but I figured those were kind of the highlights and stuff like that.
Exactly. But overall, I would say it's a good month. I need to do some trimming a little bit in the indie, and I need to trim up about 6 or 7 books from Marvel, believe it or not.
Yeah, for me, there's not a whole lot in the indie section that I feel I need to cut. There are a couple of things like Ambassadors that are just going to end on their own. For Marvel, there's one or two things like Amazing Spider-Man, which it shouldn't be a title I feel I should cut, but it does. One or two that may be leaning in that direction, like seeing how... I'm curious how the next couple issues of Fantastic Four go. It may be one that... And again, that's one of the... That's probably the earliest book I got on over at Marvel.
Yeah.
And then over at DC...
Detective.
Detective. Batman I'll probably drop as they head to the Batman-Catwoman crossover after Night Terrors.
Yeah.
And they're giving me a really good off-ramp for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm done with Batman, too. It has been pretty bad, honestly.
It disappoints me to be feeling this way because I don't think I'm a hard audience member to please. It's just they're not telling the kinds of stories that entertain me and impress me.
Well, the weirdest part about it is you could say Amazing Spider-Man and Batman are like flagship books.
Yeah.
It should be the side characters. You know, like you're really liking Doctor Strange. That should be the one. I'm not saying you want to cut Doctor Strange or we want it to be cut, but that should be the one that's a little bit on the iffy side because maybe they can't have the best talent because the sales don't justify it.
Right. Sales-wise, it's not an anchor book, but it is one of the foundational characters.
Correct. It's just weird that these top-tier books are some of the least enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, I get where they feel they could put almost anybody on certain characters and it'll sell, but that's not cutting it anymore.
Yeah.
So I need to be looking closer at what I'm getting every month and doing some strategic trims and stuff like that to where I have a better satisfaction level on what I'm reading.
Yeah, I agree.
So we've got some questions. We'll come back on Friday's episode for that. Anything else here?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.